This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what is this we're listening to?
Believe by Cher, of course, for the in honor of your column in part, for the urge to muster some belief.
I'll be honest, tonight. I was a little hokey even for me, and yeah. I can tend toward the hokey, but yeah, you do want to have some belief tonight, and it feels like, I was thinking about it, I hadn't ever stopped to count before. This is the eighth time they've come back 0-2.
I don't know. I've been counting other stuff. So I was trying to, and I think I mentioned on the show yesterday, I was trying to write something and I failed. I'm continuing to fail, but I'm actually going to try to turn something in maybe half an hour after we're done talking.
What's the topic?
And I've been thinking about, so my research has been slightly divergent from that, but not unrelated. What I've been thinking about is the Grizzlies Thunder rivalry over the years and sort of this renewal of the rivalry. So this is going to be the 22nd time those two teams have faced off in a playoff game will be tonight.
Wow.
And there's a lot of the Grizzlies franchise lore is tied into the rivalry with the Thunder. And so we're going to get to some of that and some of the fan culture stuff and all of that.
Well, I was talking to Jeffrey earlier that if you were just to rank what your absolute favorite Grizzlies playoff series were, to me, Jeffrey went with Clippers 2013, I guess it was, when you lose the first two and come back and win the next four, like that the Blake, like all that, right?
Right.
And then I think maybe San Antonio, the first win.
So they have won, if I'm doing this off my memory, I think the Grizzlies historically have won five playoff series. That's 2011 against the Spurs was the first playoff series they won. And then 2013, they won't beat the Clippers in the first round, the Thunder in the second round. In 2015, they beat the Blazers in the first round. And then this iteration, they beat Minnesota. The Wolves. So those are the five series they've won. Wow. Now, they've had some memorable series that they lost, too. But I think you probably started with the wins. And I think the two that loom largest are 2011 Spurs and 2013 Clippers.
Right. But to your point about Oklahoma City, I would say that when I think of Grizzlies playoff series, the next two I think about are the one they won. In five, was it in five when they went to the finals, or was that in six?
That was five.
That was in five.
They won four in a row. They lost game one, won four in a row. That's the one where Westbrook got injured in the first round.
But all the games went into, like, a bunch went to OT.
No, you're conflating two different series. That was so.
That was the 2013. Go ahead. Sorry, 11. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
They played the Thunder in 2011. Second round series, they lost in seven games. They played the Thunder in 2013. Second round series, 1-5. Uh-huh. That's the win that got them to the conference finals. They played the Thunder in 2014. Seven game series, games, I think it's 2-5. Four consecutive overtime games. The Grizzlies won three of the four. They came home game six with a chance to win the series in game six. They lost game six. They go to game seven at OKC. Zebo suspended for that game, which honestly probably would not have mattered at that point. But he didn't play that game, so you can believe they would have won anyway. And they lose in game seven at OKC. That was the year of Kevin Durant's MVP.
So all three, and particularly the two that
this is the fourth series between the teams.
The two that they lost were both magnificent series.
Yeah. Both seven-game series. Both games where, like, the Grizzlies, you know, you go back and look, and when you lose seven-game series, you could have won the series, right? And then the one in 2011, they lost in seven games. They lost at home in triple overtime in that one. And that's the way I always go back to 2011. I think everyone points to 2015, but I think 2011 was actually their best chance to sneak through.
Who won that year? Dallas won that year. Yeah.
Which was, I mean, Dirk was on one that season, but that was not a super team. That was a super guy. with the team around him.
So the Benno was a big part of the seven game series where Zeebo got, where Zeebo was suspended in seven.
That sounds like he was on that team. Yeah, I think that's right.
Someone was hurt in game one or didn't play in game one. I don't know. They do blend together.
Yeah,
there is certainly a glory and a richness to it all. So we will see.
Well, even beyond the playoffs, a lot of that, and I reference some of this in what I write, but I go beyond it. I mean, a lot of the like nuggets of Grizzlies lore are OKC. The Art Grind speech is OKC. The first Tony Allen game that I wrote about earlier this year was against OKC. Bust His Butt Mark was OKC.
Right.
We Don't Bluff, OKC. Champagne Tasting a Beer Budget, OKC.
So when was the We Don't Bluff?
I don't remember what season that was, but that was a regular season game that was in the middle of all that. It was a game at Oklahoma City where Marc Gasol put Kendrick Perkins in the blender, and Zach Randolph yells, "Bust His Butt, Mark." Right. And then he and Kendrick Perkins get into it. They both get tossed. They both try to go fight each other in the locker room. And then Zeebo, when he's asked about it afterward, does the whole speech. Like, I'm a jacking dude. I'm good with these hands. We don't bluff. All of that was in response to that.
And then the Champagne Taste Beer Budget?
Happened to be in OKC. It was the first game that after the trade of Rudy Gay happened to be a game at Oklahoma City. And Lionel Hollins doing his pregame media. That's where when he said that phrase.
Well, you can read that piece at the Daily Memphian, and I look forward to reading it. That'll be great. Tonight, it's funny, though. So of all the other times they've come back, 0-2, which is, what were you going to say?
Well, this is key to, and this is sort of what a little bit I'm worried about, but key to what your transition here. This is the fourth playoff series between the Grizzlies and the Thunder. The Grizzlies have been the lower seed in every one of these series.
Right. But this one, and maybe it's not true, maybe this is a prisoner of the moment. This feels more futile or worse than any other 0-2 return. The other ones were futile. The first three were futile, certainly. You didn't expect to win any of those, but there were expectations
that the Thunder series would be better. Yes. Whether it's the most futile of all playoff series, I don't think that's true.
True. But. No. Well, I mean, the Jaeger injury.
Right.
It feels worse, though, because the expectations for this team were higher.
Yeah. I think that's right. Although once you get to the playoff series, I don't know if that's true anymore.
Right. No, you're right. The expectations were higher in the year.
Right.
I think is why that it has this sort of duller feeling more dismal feeling coming into it. So they were the lower seed in each one of those series.
Lower seed in every one. And this is, if you want to really fuel your resentment against the Thunder, and there's plenty of ways to do so, Grizzlies, Memphis is good at being the underdog and good at feeling resentment.
Right.
If SGA, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, wins the MVP this season, as I suspect he will,
yeah.
This is the 24th season of the Grizzlies of Memphis. It's the 17th season of the Thunder in Oklahoma City. Every season they have ever played, they have had on their roster an MVP player, present or future, right? Kevin Durant, right. Russell Westbrook, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. They have never had a season. There's not that many guys in history of the league who have won the MVP. MVPs. They have never had a team that didn't have one of those players on it. Okay. And even the temporary team they had before they got the Thunder when the then Hornets, New Orleans was there, that was Chris Paul, who's a Hall of Fame all-time guy.
Okay, but the resentment's somewhat different because when it was Kevin Durant, it was franchise gets this franchise, they're born on third base, right?
Right.
It was you were gifted that.
Yeah.
SGA was brilliant. Basketball,
they traded for him
management.
After a rookie. He was the 10th pick in the draft. And had a good, not great rookie season. They traded for him, and then he became this. Yeah.
Why, by the way?
The fans had nothing to do with that, though.
What's funny is, the fans had nothing. The fans did not have anything to do
with it. It's a gift for them,
That's true. That it's all a gift for them. It is funny, though. Like, last night I was just with a group, and I was talking about the difficulties of winning in Memphis, right? That is a challenge, bigger challenge to win in Memphis than it is to win in L.A. And someone immediately said, yeah, well, how come Oklahoma City's doing it? And obviously, the problem is literally there is no team that has been better at managing its basketball roster in the league, probably, given everything, you can't just compare yourself to the best ever and say you should be, or the best currently, and saying you should be better than the best, right? Right.
Yeah. No, there are 30 teams in the league, and there are some that you look at and you think their management, the way they've conducted their business has been better than you.
Right.
And there are some you can look at on the other end, and it's sort of, the Grizzlies are somewhere in the middle, maybe upper middle, lower middle, depending on your perspective, but some certainly in the vast middle, not the tippy top and the tippy bottom.
And was the key to this, again, I don't expect you to know this off the top of your head, the key to the thing was the Paul George trade that they were forced into.
That's a good point, because they went out to get Paul George, and then Paul George wanted out, and then they made a great trade to do that. Yeah, and they've done a great job. Even within the great job, like, they miss on stuff too, right? I mean, they traded some, like, multiple picks to get you to, so they could draft you Usman Jean. Right, like, what's he ever done, right?
Right?
Like, they went out to get Alexei Pokushevsky. What's he done? Like, they miss on stuff too, but the hits, and this is true of the Grizzlies too, the hits are worth more than
the misses.
A good hit is worth three misses, right? And their ratio of hits to misses is super, super, super strong, which doesn't mean they don't have misses. But you hit enough,
and then their hits also been the quality of the hit also. Like, you got an MVP hit in SGA, and
you know, Jalen Williams middle first round.
It wasn't a hit to pick Chet Holmgren. Anyone would have, right?
I mean, that's like the Grizzlies. Right, I mean, you could have missed, but that's kind of like the Grizzlies getting Ja Morant and getting Jared Jackson.
How do the Grizzlies win tonight? What would it look like if they win? And is the third, what we saw in the third quarter, I mean, holding Oklahoma City to 20 doesn't seem sustainable, but like was there anything there that you can grab onto?
If they win, it's because probably, honestly, three-point shooting tilts in their direction both ways. Like, Oklahoma City has a subpar shooting night, the Grizzlies have a good shooting night, and that gets it close. You don't turn the ball over as much. I mean, the stuff that they were just trying to play quicker and get into quick shots and less passing and less opportunity for turnover. There was some of that. Maybe they'll look more like that. I'm more interested tonight, you know, win or lose, I'm sort of looking at players individually, because you're trying to learn about this team going into the summer at this point, more than thinking about winning the series. If they win both of these at home, suddenly you can change that conversation.
Right.
But until that happens, that's not really where my head is. So, like, I'm interested mainly in the big three, Jaren, Ja, Dez, but in that order in terms of interest. And I'm interested in Edie a little bit, because I think this is a bad series matchup-wise for Ja Morant and Zach Edie. The Grizzlies sort of reoriented their structure around Ja Morant and Zach Edie. Now they have the playoff team that's the worst possible situation for both of those guys.
Right.
And which has been a little bit of a problem. But, like, you know, Edie's a rookie thrown into a terrible matchup, but he was not particularly effective on either end in Oklahoma City. Does that change a little bit back home? Does he sort of catch his breath and get more comfortable? And then I think Jaren, because you're headed towards, you know, this contract decision this summer, and his playoff history is shaky, and now you have had two games, and it's been shaky. Like, it's been a really bad game and a pretty good game, and I'd like to see some more consistency from him, even if you only got two games left. Like, let's look like a guy who can do it in the playoffs, you know?
But do you believe anything hinges on it? Like, in other words, let's say he has...
Hinges too strong, but it's relevant information.
Right. I mean, in the end, I suspect they're going to do with him what they do with him, no matter, unless he blows out his knee or something, whatever happens here.
Right. If Jaren scores a total of 8 points in the next two games, versus if Jaren scores a total of 58 points in the next two games, that would change my attitude a little bit about him going into the summer, because these are playoff games against an elite defense, and how you look in those games, I think, has... It's just one game, but that one game means more than, like, one regular season game.
But it might change your attitude. Will it change their offer?
I don't know. I don't know.
There's no way to know. I can't get in their head.
Yeah. You know?
And I guess just generally, like, Desmond Bane hasn't been good in this series either. He's not good against Oklahoma City. It's a hard...
I'm less interested on... I think he is not, with all due respect to Desmond Bane... Uh-huh. I think he is not quite the same magnitude of talent, frankly, as Ja Morant and Jared Jackson. Desmond Bane should be the third guy on this team, and when he is not the third guy on this team, that's like commentary on the one and two guys. He's a good number three, but I just think that's what he is. And the reasons this is a particularly bad matchup for Ja Morant is also the reasons why it's a pretty bad matchup for Desmond Bane. It's a bad matchup for everybody, but it's less bad for Jaren, and that's why I think I want to see Jaren be productive in this matchup.
How much do you think Brandon Clark and Jalen Wells, obviously they would have helped. Like, well, what, how much is this influenced by their absence?
Oh, I think they would have helped a lot. I don't think they would have helped to the point of, like, flipping the dial from the loss to the win, which is what ultimately matters. But I think there's such an, I think there's been an athleticism problem on this team from day one. And I've talked about that from even when they were.
Last year you were talking about this.
I think it's a roster issue. I think it's been a roster issue. And, like, Jalen Wells is not a great athlete, frankly, but he is, like, 6'7". He's got size, and Clark is, even, you know, coming off the injury, is among the better athletes on the team. I just think they're throwing guys out there who athletically just can't keep up with the Thunder, and I think Wells and Clark would keep up a little bit better than some of the guys who are playing, So I think those guys would actually help them quite a bit. But I don't think it would, like, you know, turn the series or anything.
And then you got two wings who aren't seeing action, Vince and Gigi.
Who are better athletes. I just, and neither have been good this year. I just think Gigi's so young and so bad defensively that I don't really, to me, that's a break in case of emergency. And, like, there's no, the situation is such that there's no emergency great enough that it matters right. That much, because you can't really, you know, this is not, anyway. Vince, I think, should be playing. And I'm one of the last guys on the island fighting the war in the Pacific on this one. But I just think he is not, they've been too impatient with him. He has struggled in these games, but it's like, they should have thrown him out there and, like, you're getting 20 minutes a night for 2 weeks and we'll see what it looks like after 2 weeks. Instead, it's been too skittish, because I think the alternatives are such that you would have been better off giving him a very long leash. And I think his length and athleticism would play in this series a little bit better than, I mean, John Conchar, I mean, Luke Kennard can't even get a shot off, you know? Right. I mean, I just think you're at such a dearth of athleticism on the perimeter that I would have more patience with that guy. But I think that ship sailed for right now.
Last year at this time, heading into this coming year, we would have thought, oh, Vince and Gigi will be factors on this team. And you would have, or you put them in different categories. But I was
more convinced than right. Vince before the injuries than I was Gigi for this season.
Yeah. Do you think for next season, and who knows, there'll be lots of moving pieces, but right now, as you look towards next season, do you think the organization, again, you're guessing, assumes that
I think they
will be relevant pieces on next year's team, or assumes they won't be? Or
it depends on depends on your definition of the word relevant. I don't think you can assume. I don't think your planning can be for either of those guys to be in an 8-man rotation for next season. You can't plan for that. You can plan for them to be on your roster and to make improvements and to get a shot, and you hope maybe they break through into those kind of roles. But I don't think you can't plan. You need to plan for your team to have an 8-man rotation that goes into the season that does not include those players. Like they're 10th, 11th, 12th or whatever, and we'll see where it goes. But you can't like pencil them into those spots. You get to plan on filling those spots without including those guys.
Well, I mean, right now, again, we see what, again, this is what we'll get.
Maybe 9-man rotation.
Right now, you got the if you had, say, the five starters, including Wells and Edie, and then you'd have, I mean, again, things will change. Will they bring back Santi, Clark, and Pip? And there's 8-man right there. That's your 8. If they bring those back,
could be. There's lots of moving pieces, and a lot of this is going to start with what happens with Jaren, because the mechanisms you have to do other things are not locked into place. Those are everything's contingent. That's the problem with talking about this stuff, because there's like 88 different things, and they're all contingent on each other.
It's funny,
but it's my belief that they should try to find avenues to add one or two rotation players to this team that are not currently on the team.
Right. We'll get into that, presumably, next week. And there will be time. So you said that what happens in the next two games might influence, or will influence, could influence how you think about Jaren. Would it influence
I think playoff performance always influences how you think about players.
How about Isola?
It's hard. It should, but it's hard to read from the out. I think what matters more is internal, not external. It is A, the feedback they get from, assuming they want to bring back John Morant, Jaren Jackson, Desmond Bane, and I see no indication that they don't, the feedback they get from those players in particular, but also like what they see from him, not as much in the games, but like on the practice floor, in the locker room, in sort of, I think the read they get from how he's handling the team in those areas probably means as much as what they're seeing in games against OKC, where you've drawn a bad hand and you're trying to play it in that situation, you know.
It's funny, on TV the other day at halftime, Kenny Smith said, "This is what happened. This is what happens when you change a coach this late in the year."
With all due respect to the very few people who cover the NBA nationally are attuned to all 30 teams closely.
Right.
There are a few people who are like pretty good at this. Like Sam Vecenie, if you listen to this podcast, he just doesn't sleep, I guess. He seems really keyed in to a lot of stuff. Most guys, even like the smartest and the best, they're not paying attention every day to every team when they can, and so you end up just saying stuff that sort of sounds right, but when you start poking at it, it's not really, you know.
You don't have any. You don't believe that this would look any different if Taylor Jenkins were, and not it would look different. Might look different in the way, but in the results, wouldn't look different if Taylor Jenkins.
I'm not convinced the fundamental outcomes would have been much different in either direction, frankly, right. On the coaching situation.
We did have Hollinger wrote about the Hawks today, and in the course of writing about the Hawks today, and whether they should trade Trae Young. This is the kind of thing we're going to have this offseason. It talks about how Trae Young may not have much trade value.
Right.
The more tantalizing possibility might be a player-for-player change of scenery move. Young for, say, LaMelo Ball or Ja Morant, two other young, talented lead guards on big contracts whose trade interest might not match their brand names.
There was a podcast, Zach Lowe and Howard Beck, they were talking about the Grizzlies. They were talking about, you know, trading Ja Morant. And Zach Lowe said on the podcast, like, you know, what, do you try to trade him for Trae Young or LaMelo Ball? I don't think those teams would do that, which may be true, but I wouldn't do that if I'm the Grizzlies.
Right.
And my thing is, again, I mean, you should throw it out a Ja Morant trade discussion bomb here at the end of the segment. I think about this stuff all the time. I don't have any indication they're looking to trade Ja Morant, but I think about this stuff all the time.
Yeah.
I was brainstorming Ja Morant trade stuff in December. I thought all
this
stuff.
You should have told me. We'll do it every
day. I've thought all this stuff through.
Right.
And I don't even, those are trades I wouldn't make. And maybe the other teams wouldn't make them either, but I don't believe in those players. And for all the issues that Morant poses, like, they're different things. LaMelo Ball, like, Ja Morant has been the best player on a team that's won 50-plus games, that's won a playoff series. He's had huge games in the playoffs. LaMelo Ball has never done any of that, ever, and I don't believe in it. Trae Young has done all that stuff.
Right.
But I'm not convinced that the ceiling of a Trae Young-oriented team is any higher than the ceiling of a Ja Morant-oriented team. And so if there's no difference, like, I'd rather have the guy I want to watch play basketball. So I just don't – those are not – if you told me you have to trade Ja Morant, those are not the type of trades I would be looking at.
Yeah. We'll get more into that, too. In terms of the other series – a couple of them are, as you would expect, duds, sort of whatever, like what you would imagine, not unlike this one, Cleveland and Boston, certainly. But we've got some real intrigue, certainly Knicks-Pistons. I don't know whether you've been able to catch any of that. And then last night, Rockets beat the Warriors, and Jimmy Butler goes out.
Yeah, no, that's a huge – the Jimmy Butler thing is a real tipping point for Golden State. Like, they go from, like, a team that – I don't know if you could beat the Thunder, but a team that's a real chance to go deep in the playoffs to a team that's, like – you know, just a 500 level kind of team, because without him, it's just Steph Curry. And when you add him to Steph Curry, it's a real offensive tipping point for them. And so I think if Jimmy Butler doesn't get hurt, I mean, I picked the Warriors to win that series before it started, and I'd feel great about the Warriors winning that series. But if he's not playing, that radically changes the whole thing.
How do you feel about the Lakers and the T-Wolves these days?
I picked the Timberwolves to win that series. I mean, they got the split in L.A. You're going back to Minnesota. I still feel pretty good about the Timberwolves. But it's a hard thing to feel great about just because, like, you know, when you think about who the best half-court dominated possession operators are, the Lakers probably get the two best in the series. But I just don't like the – I don't think their team's that good.
And then I haven't talked about the Nico Harrison stuff. It's just gobsmacking.
Yeah, I don't
know. Do you have a theory? I mean, there was a long piece that Tim McMahon did. I don't know if you read that in ESPN about the grand
schism
between them.
I actually talked to Tim in OKC, but I still haven't read the story. I need to.
The level of betrayal of your own fan base
is
just staggering. I don't know.
That's a team that I think needs to blow it up. If Kyrie Irving did not get hurt, I would not necessarily feel that way. But I just think that the only way out for that team is just to blow it up and start over, and
including
mea culpa and go forward.